Good morning, everyone. So thank you for the effort you've made to be out here this morning. As a Southern man, it's April, and it's still cold. This is horrible, but I'm so glad that y'all made the effort to be out here. Appreciate you a lot. I want to make a quick note before we get into it this morning. I was told that sometimes my volume drops. I know I do that. I'm trying to work on it. It's a mental thing. If my volume starts to drop, just like point up. Tell me, that will remind me to keep my voice up. So just letting you know, you can do that. It's not mean. I need to do it. So, all right. I remember the first day that I fell in love with science. So I was in kindergarten, and our teacher brought in caterpillars. And what our responsibility was to watch and take care of these caterpillars as they turned into butterflies. And so here I am, a kid, and I'm looking at this tiny, many-legged, kind of ugly, hairy creature. It's like kind of gross. You gotta take care of it. And then one day you come in, and all of a sudden it's turned into a pod. It's like, what? The caterpillar's in that pod. And then you wait a little while longer, and out of that pod comes a totally different looking creature. And it's got wings on it, and it has a totally different diet, and it can fly. It's like, it's awesome. But that's the last time that I've sat and watched a caterpillar turn into a butterfly. I think it's awesome, but life becomes more busy, and you almost kind of see it once, and you're like, oh yeah, that's cool. I think some of the problems that we run into and like when we're thinking about the natural world and we just start taking things for granted, that becomes a problem. The sun rises every day. We don't really sit there and be like, man, the sun has risen. Or rain. There's water falling from the sky and there's a cycle that goes through. Like, that's awesome. We don't think about that stuff anymore. Life becomes too busy. We become too full. And even more dangerous than thinking about science and nature that way is when we start feeling that way about Jesus. If you're like me, you grew up and you heard a lot of stories about Jesus. Even if you're just from the United States, you know, you hear about Jesus all the time, you see him all over the internet, and so it's like, well, I kind of know Jesus. I knew the trivia growing up, I knew some of the big stories. But then it becomes so easy to be like, well, I already know enough. I've gotten to a point where Jesus is no longer magical or transcendent or incredible to me anymore. He has not gripped my imagination recently. And so this morning, what I'm going to be making an effort to do is to make you fall in love with Jesus again. Because he is that incredible. And we have to think about that more. We have told him that to sit in this pew and to partake of the Lord's Supper that we just did, we are saying, I trust Jesus with my whole life. But if I'm not enchanted by him, why do I trust him? Why do I care for him? So we're going to be trying to work through that this morning. I also want to make it pretty clear that I'm going to be working through four different stories out of the Gospels. But if there's another story that you're like, this is one that grips me, and you want to read that for yourself this morning, I encourage you to do that. Whatever makes you fall in love with Jesus. We're going to open up in Matthew 14, if you'd like to turn there. Matthew 14. I'm going to start reading in verse 13. It says, now when Jesus heard this, he withdrew from there in a boat to a desolate place by himself. But when the crowds heard it, they followed him on foot from the towns. And he went ashore and he saw a great crowd and he had compassion on them and healed their sick. Now when it was evening, the disciples came to him and said, this is a desolate place, and the day is now over. Send the crowds away to go into villages and buy food for themselves. But Jesus said to them, they need not go away. You give them something to eat. And they said to him, we only have 5 loaves here and 2 fish. And he said, bring them here to me. Then he ordered the crowds to sit down on the grass, and taking up the 5 loaves and the 2 fish, he looked up to heaven and said a blessing. And he broke the loaves and gave them to the disciples, and the disciples gave them to the crowds, and they all ate and were satisfied. And they took up 12 baskets full of broken pieces left over. And those who ate were about 5,000 men, besides women and children. If you read before this part in Matthew chapter 14, you will notice that John the Baptist has died. Not only is John the Baptist a great prophet, but he's also Jesus' cousin. And so you guys know what it feels like when you lose a loved one. The type of weight or depression that you feel, like you're carrying the world on your shoulders. And so Jesus is in that position where he has lost someone who is near and dear to his heart. And he wants to get away. He gets in a boat, heads off by himself. And people say, actually, you're not going anywhere by yourself. We're coming with you. And so they follow him while he's on that boat. Now, when you're sad and you want to lock yourself in a room and someone knocks on the door and says, hey, can you do this for me? That's the last thing you want to do. I don't want anything to do with what you're having to say with me. Let me have my me time, right? But Jesus, while he should be having his me time, people say, hey, can you come and heal this person? Jesus doesn't slap people. He doesn't get mad at them. Instead, what it says is he feels compassion. This stomach-churning love because people are coming to him in broken moments and saying, we need your help. And Jesus cares more about them than his own sorrow. And so he spends all day healing people who have come and interrupted his alone time. It's like, that's pretty incredible right there. Then Matthew also tells us that it's been a long day and now evening comes. They're kind of in the wilderness area because that's where Jesus was going, to be in a place where he's by himself. And now, you know, they're out here, they have no food. And so the disciples, their reaction is often, too often ours. All right, these people made the irresponsible decision to come out here by themselves and did not bring any food. They need to go off and they need to figure it out for themselves. Very common moniker I've heard is that God only helps those who learn to help themselves. Where do we get that idea? Did we learn to help ourselves and then the gospel happened after that? Or did God come into our absolute mess that we had made of everything? And so, Jesus says, no, actually, you guys are going to feed them. The disciples are like, we got nothing, man. We got 5 loaves and 2 fish. And as we see in John 6, it's actually something they had taken from a little boy. Some like mother was like, here, take this as a snack. It's not going to fill anybody. It's a joke. And so Jesus takes these into his hands, and you're just kind of like, well, I mean, if you're sitting there, what are you going to expect? Here's the thing is like, whenever we come to Jesus, we bring something that maybe even less than 5 loaves and 2 fishes. We bring a heart that has been poisoned by sin, that has been trampled on by people who do not care about us, that has been cut by trauma and other pains. And we offer that mess to God and say, this is all I have. And he says, that's all I've ever wanted. And so what Jesus does with 5 loaves and 2 fish, nothing, is he turns it into a banquet that has never been seen before. Even just like, again, trying to reframe this for us. How does Jesus do this miracle, like in your eyes? You're looking at it, does Jesus have like one piece of bread and he just kind of keeps tearing it and it just does the same thing over and over again? Or does it just appear that way in the apostles' baskets as they're trying to hand it out? I have zero idea. But it's just this wild idea of, okay, we've got 5 loaves, we've got 2 fish, and we have 5,000 men. Not on top, like the women and children, that could easily be 20,000 people. And they're all not just fed a little bit, but they are satisfied. It's an incredible miracle that blows my mind. I have a hard time wrapping my mind around it. But 2 really important things that we learn from this is, number one, Jesus is extremely compassionate. If someone were to bother us when we're in a state of grief, the last thing we want to do is help them. But Jesus sees that as an opportunity for compassion, for love, for demonstrating that this crowd and their needs are more important than his own. And so that means for you, like it does for me, whenever you're struggling with insomnia or you've had an awful day and you're like, can I pray to Jesus about this? Can I pray to God about this? Will I receive mercy? Yes, you will. The second thing also to consider is Jesus has the power to say or to do what he says. Life is kind of about investments, whether it's about money investments or the people you invest in. And you start asking the questions about, is this going to fail? Is there a potential that it will not fulfill on its promise? But when you invest in Jesus, he has the power to actually do what he has promised. And that is what should give us confidence. Whenever we hand over God the mess of our lives, he's able to turn it into something truly incredible, truly miraculous. He's able to leave 12 baskets full afterwards. He can give grace upon grace. That is just one of the beauties of Jesus. The second passage I want us to turn to is over in Mark chapter 1. Very short story here towards the end of the first chapter of Mark. And Jesus is going to have an encounter with a leper. Starting in verse 40, it says, "And a leper came to him, imploring him, and kneeling, said to him, 'If you will, you can make me clean.' Moved with pity, he stretched out his hand and touched him and said to him, 'I will be clean.' And immediately the leprosy left him and he was made clean. And Jesus sternly charged him and sent him away at once. And he said to him, 'See that you say nothing to anyone, but go show yourself to the priest and offer for your cleansing what Moses commanded for a proof to them.' But he went out and began to talk freely about it and to spread the news so that Jesus could no longer openly enter a town, but was out in desolate places, and people were coming to him from every quarter." So Mark's gospel opens a lot faster than the other gospels, where he is right into the business. Before we even read this, Jesus is already casting out demons. So he is on the spot. He's already doing these incredible things. But then we have this leper in verse 40. And thus far, we haven't seen Jesus heal something like leprosy yet. But this man still has a thought. He's been able to do these other things. Maybe he can do this for me. Now, whenever we read about leprosy in the Bible, it's usually a term that encompasses a lot of skin conditions, primarily contagious ones. And in the law of Moses, to protect other people from this contagion that was destroying you, you also had to be isolated from society and family and community because you can't infect other people. If anyone came near you, you had to declare your uncleanness. And so you can imagine how lonely and how sad of an existence that could become. Not only are you suffering from this incurable disease, you're also suffering alone or away from your family. And so this man goes to Jesus, who has heard and maybe even seen something that Jesus has done. But has he healed leprosy yet? We don't know. But he says, not with any question, he says, "I know that if you are willing to make me clean, you can do it. I have that much confidence. I have that much faith in your power." But the question is Jesus willing to? Now in our text, we see a similar word to what we already saw in compassion. He says that Jesus had pity on the man. And so one of the things that's incredible about this miracle is not just the power that Jesus has, that when he touches the man, he immediately becomes clean. The man's uncleanness is not passed to him. It's that Jesus' glory and his goodness passes to that man. But also consider, who knows how long this man was a leper? How long had he never had someone touch him or hug him before this point? And Jesus' response isn't just healing him at a distance, but touching him. Welcoming him back home to the land of the clean. It's such a beautiful story because it just reminds me again for the same thing that happens to us with Jesus. is we ask Him, no matter how messy we have made our lives and the garbage that we have done, no matter the harm that we have caused, we come to Him and we say, if You are willing, You can make me clean. And His response is, I am willing. So after this, Jesus tells the man, you got to not tell anybody. It's a very common thing in Mark. Don't tell anybody, because he's kind of waiting for a point where he can be further revealed. So don't tell anyone. But the man goes out and openly speaks about Jesus and tells everybody what's happened. And so when Jesus says something and you do the opposite, that's not a good thing. But it is something to take in consideration for us. Because not only have we been made clean, but we've also been told, hey, go tell other people about what's happened. Go tell other people about Jesus. We've been wiped clean. We've been given new power and strength. We've been given comfort. And so why is there such a hesitancy from us sometimes to talk about, yeah, Jesus is pretty great. What Jesus has done for my life is wonderful. And He can help you too. Our next story comes from Luke chapter 23. We're fast forwarding quite a bit ahead in Jesus' story, naturally, and we are on the cross. Luke chapter 23, and I'm going to pick up in verse 32. It says, two others who were criminals were led away to be put to death with Him. And when they came to the place that is called the Skull, there they crucified Him and the criminals, one on His right and one on His left. And Father said, forgive them, for they know not what they do. And they cast lots to divide His garments, and the people stood by watching. But the rulers scoffed at Him, saying, He saved others, let Him save Himself, if He is the Christ of God, His chosen one. The soldiers also mocked Him, coming up and offering Him sour wine and saying, if You are the King of the Jews, save Yourself. There is also an inscription over Him, this is the King of the Jews. One of the criminals who were hanged railed at Him, saying, are You not the Christ? Save Yourself and us. But the other rebuked Him, saying, do You not fear God, since You are in the same sentence of condemnation? And we indeed justly, for we have received the due reward of our deeds, but this man has done nothing wrong. And he said, Jesus, remember me when You come into Your kingdom. And He said to him, truly, I say to you, today you will be with Me in paradise. When I was a kid, around 5th, 6th grade, I hadn't hit puberty yet, and so I was a pretty small person, but I had really big ears. And so people called me Dumbo and Satellite Dish, and those names have kind of like stuck with me, right? So if people like make fun of my ears, even now, that's going to sting. The reason this draws me to this story is because Jesus not only gets blasphemed, but He's also like really harmed by these people. We picked up in a story where Jesus has gone over 12 hours without food. He is also, we don't know the last time He slept at this point. And He's been scourged. His back is torn open. He's had a crown of thorns placed on His head. He's had to carry a cross that He couldn't carry all the way up the mountain. He's been betrayed by all His friends. And now He hangs from the most brutal execution pole in history, where He has to push up on the wood just to breathe. It is a horrific scene. And the words that we get from Luke, Jesus isn't yelling at everybody else and telling them how cursed they are in front of God. His response to all of that evil is, forgive them. I've struggled to forgive people for telling me that I have Satellite Dish ears. I can't believe, you know, this is the Lord on the cross. This is the character that He shows. And in response to Jesus' His call to forgive them, how does everybody act? It just turns into more chaos. We see that the people, the soldiers, are gambling with His clothes. And so that means He is hanging in front of the cross, hanging on the cross naked. It is shameful. It is humiliating. Not only do we have that, but then we have the Jewish leaders who are mocking him. You said that you're the Messiah. You said that you can save people. You've done all this healing and raising and all this stuff. You can get yourself off that cross. Do it. Really prove that you're the Messiah. This ain't our king. This is a joke. This is a husk of a man. This is a shame. We see that the Romans feel the same way. This is no king. This is a joke. It's really cool how the gospel unites Jew and Gentile and it's good news. But we also see the opposite here, that they're united in their hatred of Jesus too. Both of them say, this is not how we would want our God or our King or our Messiah to act. And so the scene moves from how the people on the ground are treating Jesus, and then it goes up to the cross, and we see these two criminals. Now, if you're reading over in Matthew's gospel, it starts off by saying that both of these criminals are insulting Jesus. Both of them are saying and mocking him along with everyone else. But in Luke 23, we see that one of them has a change of heart. And so, they're railing, one of them is railing at him. Jesus, if you're really that guy, you can bring us down from this cross. But then the criminal, probably seeing everything that's been happening, hearing Jesus' gracious words, responds, this is something different. You and I are on this cross because we deserve it. This guy, there's something different about him. And so he asked Jesus, will you allow me to go with you and be in paradise with you today? Now, again, someone making fun of my Dumbo satellite dish ears. The last thing I want to do is tell them, yeah, have this free gift. But Jesus' response is, yes, you've done all this evil, but I will have mercy. It's just unfair. But again, the character of Jesus tells us about someone who is just so much greater than the rest of us. Yesterday, or last week, we talked about forgiveness and how big of a struggle that is for us as humans. We like to feel bitter. We like to feel like we have some sort of power or authority over somebody. But Jesus, for anyone who turns to him, says, come and be with me in paradise. It's an incredible thought. Last passage I want to conclude with this morning is found over in John chapter 21. John 21. So this is after Jesus has resurrected from the dead. And we're going to read about one of his last interactions that he has with his disciples. Start reading in verse 1. After this, Jesus revealed himself again to the disciples by the Sea of Tiberias, and he revealed himself in this way. Simon Peter, Thomas called the twin, Nathanael of Cana in Galilee, the sons of Zebedee, and two others of his disciples were together. Simon Peter said to them, I am going fishing. And they said to him, we will go with you. And they went out and got to the boat. At night they caught nothing. Just as day was breaking, Jesus stood on the shore, yet the disciples did not know that it was Jesus. And Jesus said to them, children, do you have any fish? And they answered him, no. He said, cast the net on the right side of the boat and you will find some. So they cast it. And now they were not able to haul it in because of the quantity of the fish. That disciple whom Jesus loved therefore said to Peter, it is the Lord. And when Simon Peter heard that it was the Lord, he put on his outer garment, for he was stripped for the work, and threw himself into the sea. The other disciples came in on the boat, dragging the net full of fish, for they're not far off land, but about 100 yards off. When they got out on land, they saw a charcoal fire in place, with fish laid out on it and bread. Jesus said to them, bring some of the fish that you have just caught. So Simon Peter went aboard and hauled the net ashore full of large fish, 153 of them. And although there were so many, the net was not torn. Jesus said to them, come and have breakfast. Now none of the disciples dared ask him, who are you? For for they knew it was the Lord. Jesus came and took the bread and gave it to them. So with the fish. Now this was the third time Jesus was revealed to the disciples after he was raised from the dead. So one of the interesting things about Jesus' resurrection is as he appears to his disciples, they have an understanding of who he is, but he doesn't look exactly the same as he did before. There are some things that still are recognizable about who he is, like the nail spots that are still in his hands and in his side, but there's something that is pretty radically changed about his appearance. So they're out on this boat because it's been 3 days, the Lord is resurrected, but they're still stressed. It's been a dark time for them. And so they go out on a boat, maybe because they want to think clearly or they don't want to think at all. Go back to something that you're comfortable in. And so they're out on the boat and they go all night. They catch nothing. Which repeats another story that we've heard that Jesus interacted with his disciples earlier in Luke. So they go all night and then a stranger shows up on the shore and tells them, hey, cast it on the right side, which normally you would think, I cast it on the right side all night, actually, and nothing happened. They cast it on the right side, and then the fish just about, start breaking the boat again. In this story, I think it's kind of interesting how John's the first one to notice, all right, this is Jesus. This is our Lord. But then Simon is the one who jumps out of the boat after putting on his clothes and swimming out to see Jesus. Pretty impressive 100-yard swim. But additionally, I think John is a little bit bitter because the way he says, he left the rest of us to do all the work. We had to pull the fish in. I think that's funny. But so they pull in the net full of fish, and then they bring the boat into the land. And when they get to the land, we see that Jesus, this mysterious stranger, their resurrected Lord, has a charcoal fire built, and he's making breakfast. And again, like sometimes when we look on this, it's kind of insignificant. We eat breakfast just about every day, like not that big of a deal. But particularly in the ancient world, the people that you eat with are the ones you want to have a connection with. These are the people that you want to be intimate with. And so Jesus could have done anything with this resurrected body. He could be anyone. And what he chooses to do is to have breakfast with a bunch of fishermen. This story is like really tranquil and helpful for me because the world feels like a very chaotic place and very frustrating often. But then we have Jesus who just invites them to breakfast and it's really beautiful. I'm also not a person who eats a ton of fish and certainly I've not eaten it for breakfast, but if Jesus made it, I would definitely eat it. So it's just like one of those stories that fills me with a little bit of hope and a reminder that Jesus is very human. And the desire he has to eat a meal with all of us as well, just as he did earlier. And so those are four stories for me that as I'm reading the Gospels, they just remind me about the Lord that I serve. Not only the fact that he is the most powerful being ever in the world, but also that he has character that is not compromised and is constantly faithful. That even in the times of my life where I have been faithless to him and I do not care about what he has to say, he is always willing to welcome me back with open arms. And so this morning, I want to encourage you that you do some reflection for yourself. You can take one of the four stories that we talked about this morning and think about that for yourself, or another Jesus story that really intrigues you. And as you're reading, I want you to do it every morning or every night if you're so inclined. And as you're reading that story, I want you to ask the question about what about this part of Jesus brings me comfort in a time like this? What about this reminds me of the goodness and hope that I have? And then, of course, if you wear the name Christian, you're not just supposed to see how Jesus acted, but you're supposed to act how Jesus acted. And so maybe you cannot do a miraculous thing. You cannot bring out 153 fish from the ocean, but you can show kindness and show making people breakfast, right? And so there are ways that we can replicate what Jesus does to show the impact and the hope that he has placed on our lives. All too often, we become disenchanted with things. That because the world becomes so normalized, because we just expect spring to show up every year, we're just like, cool, there's flowers, I'm going to ignore them. I urge you, do not do that with Jesus. Because what happens all too often is people think, for a really long time, I've been following Jesus, and really, they've kind of been looking at the ground, and Jesus is no longer ahead of them. They start acting in ways that are totally contrary to the way of Christ while still wearing his name. That is a real danger. And so I encourage you to fall in love with Jesus for who he really is and follow him every step of the way. And this morning, if you have, you're worried about your position with Jesus, or you don't even know him, or you're struggling to trust him, whatever it is, we're here to help you. So there's a way that we can serve you. Please let that be known. With that said, Ev is going to lead us in our invitation song.
Travel down a lonely road, and no one seemed to care. The birds.